extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr. It is upon us. CCL, CONCACAF, Champions League. We no longer are comparing it to a pandemic, but we love it all the same. We got a big show for you today because real soccer is back. We've sat in these basements or I don't know what you guys are in, apartments, lofts, whatever it might be, for many, many months now. What, almost 5 months without a real soccer game between Major League Soccer teams and anyone else? Just dreams, just hopes, just mirages in the future of a better time, a better place, and ridiculous action all across this region. So we're
almost
here.
Almost 4 months. The last time was mid-late December with LAFC. So it's been almost 4 months.
Oh my God. See, that doesn't even feel real. Like it feels like it actually happened.
Feels like a dream to see an MLS team go that far in the CCL.
I was going
to
say like a nightmare, a recurring nightmare that I've tried to forget and now is back. Look, FS1 has CONCACAF Champions League rights. MLSsoccer.com, the new and improved MLSsoccer.com. Go check it out if you haven't already. Get the app if you don't have that. Complete coverage there. Everything you need to know about this tournament. 16 teams, one champion. Never before has it been a champion out of this league. Maybe that will change this year. Maybe it won't. We'll get that in just a second. We are going to keep our season previews going and then end them because we have the final three, Atlanta United, Portland Timbers, and the MLS Cup champion, Columbus Crew, all of them in CCL. And then we've also got at MLSsoccer.com, let's see, preseason coverage, because that's rolling along, because opening day remains April 16th. That's now just in about 11 days. Sam J. Jones has your behind-the-scenes look at what it's like for players when they get traded or moved. Kalen, you have a little experience with that. Well, Sam talked to some folks out there. And if you don't subscribe to The Kickoff, do that. It is one of the best newsletters out there. I barely read newsletters. I subscribe to a lot of them. That is one that I read every single day. And also, MLS is implementing concussion substitutions. So that's really good news on the safety front. MLSsoccer.com has that. It's right on the front page. Go check it out. All right, let's get into it. Tuesday, April 6th. Tomorrow, if you're listening on Monday. Today, if you're listening on Tuesday. Three games starting at 5 p.m. Eastern. Portland Timbers in Honduras. Marathon, Atlanta United in Costa Rica. Alajuelense, and then Cruz Azul goes to Haiti as well. Wednesday, Thursday, more action. We're going to go through our previews in the order that I think is most likely for an MLS team to win. And I'm making no guarantees. In fact, I would love to jinx it and just say right now that an MLS team is not going to win this tournament. Zero chance. Mm. Can't happen. Won't happen. Yet more gut punches. Yet more free space. It is our fate.
Is it a reverse jinx if you announce that it's a reverse jinx?
Oh, well, I guess that's something we can debate once my column drops, because this is all in a column, and I maybe didn't really think through reverse jinxes and jinxes in a well enough way here. Let's just jump right in. Can this be the year? Do we care if this is the year? Is this just, you know what, just sit back and enjoy it because we love this tournament and stop putting so many expectations on it, because that is ultimately what we do every single year?
Mm-hmm. So can this be the year? I had a sort of a come to Jesus moment on last Thursday's show when Gassman pointed out the fact that the Columbus Crew could actually be one of the best teams in MLS history. Like, this team, they have no weaknesses. And the question with Columbus is, are their strengths good enough in the biggest games on the continent? That is an as yet unanswered question, but it's a legitimate question. So can this be the year? Yes. Will this be the year? Free space is disappointment. I'm going to go with no, it will not be the year. But if you look at these teams, Columbus is really, really, really good. So there is a very, very plausible way that it could happen. But still no, free space is disappointment.
One of us has scored a goal in this competition.
David?
I mean, he would have really, we would hear about it more. But we got to watch this, Kalen. We got to watch your just beautiful, you like played it down, but it was an incredible goal.
Thank you. Jonathan David ask.
You've been here. You've done this. Tell us what you thought in the moment. Tell us what you think now that you're not having to do it yourself. You don't got to go down to Central America. You don't got to slog through post preseason. You don't got to try to find a way through a tournament where there has never been a way to get through.
Oh, I just was having a flashback to going down to Panama, and I didn't play in that match. I was recovering from an injury, of course, but it was the nicest hotel I've ever stayed in my life, and it was like a beautiful beach. It was lovely, but the game was
Kalen
not.
Had a good time.
The game was not. We lost. It was difficult. It was brutal, and so I know a little bit about that CCL disappointment, but it's a great tournament, and I just think like, you know, when we looked at back towards the Olympic qualifiers, and you know, not to you know, jar anybody here, but I think as far as your development as a young player, I mean, it's a really important one as well to get those types of matches in. But yeah, I'm cautiously pessimistic here, where I'm open to have my mind changed to be positive. But I'm pretty pessimistic, as always in this tournament. We've gotten so close, but just not over the top. And when you look at kind of the teams right now and coming off of a long layoff, I mean, Columbus probably less so than others. I think that would be helpful for them. And then the added depth pieces that they've gone into. But it's looking tough. I don't know. It's not looking good. We were sort of debating beforehand as well, where I feel better. I'm interested to see Atlanta United and if Joseph can get healthy as this goes on. But I also understand that, you know, it might not be the easiest. And I know, Weeby, you feel different about Atlanta
United. I think they actually have the worst chance. And I think back, actually, isn't it right after MLS Cup, Atlanta United MLS Cup, that they went and had some like really sort of like shockingly poor results under Frank DeBoer and CONCACAF Champions League that started his tenure? I mean, there is a little bit of scar
although
tissue.
In that year, I think they beat Al Valencia.
Yeah, I think they got
and through. They beat Herediano, I thought it was. And
oh, Herediano, sorry. Yeah, not
and then they got they actually got a win at, against Monterrey.
But no, they lost it was second leg 5-0.
It was the second leg, but like, look, that Monterrey team was a wagon, sure. And getting any win against them was actually like that was well done.
You're gonna hate me for this comparison, so feel free to just roast me. Just let me get through it. I'm thinking of this tournament like I think of golf. 95% of it's going to be terrible. Cancel. You smile through it. You cancel. Smile through it and then only remember cancel. The 5%. We only remember the finalists, not all the pain that comes to
I look
to
forward
us.
To all the people listening to this, which was the cut that Anders just put in and then coming back to this moment. Yeah, so Andrew's connection broke down. We're going to talk CCL a little bit more coming up on YouTube. You can read his column on MLSsoccer.com.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Right, one of the things is, so wait, what Kalen said though was like the experience of going down there to central these great Central American clubs and you know their soccer culture and experiencing that as a young player after the US U23s failed in Olympic qualifying, we did a spaces Twitter spaces and Zarek Valentin came on and because he had like he was part of that 2012 group that had, you know, struck out, you know, not taking the last hurdle to get to the Olympics. And he's played some CCL. And he said, the first time I played at Saprissa, I aged 5 years in 90 minutes. And he didn't mean that like he just felt old and worn down after it. It means the experience that you go through in these kind of live or die continental games. You cannot replicate that. We just haven't seen the ability for teams to replicate that.
It's also real quick to say, this is, because we had the whole Olympic conversation and I made some points, this is where these players are going to get that experience now. It's not really youth tournaments. It's not really getting national team caps to figure it out. It's like, if you want Anthony Fontana and George Bello and Jeremy Abobasi and Eric Williamson to be national team guys for World Cup qualifying and have CONCACAF experience, this is where it's going to happen now, and this is where it should happen going forward. That's why I say, yeah, Tyler Adams hasn't played a ton of national team stuff, but like he did it in CCL. He's had that experience. That's where players should be getting it now.
give me that Aiden Morris reference there as well. Look, that makes me dream. We talk a lot about MLS Next now and sort of the next iteration of youth development. And when I was listening to that conversation, it was surprising to me that Zarek would want to get on a public sense and talk about, first of all, the failure of the moment for the Olympics that he was also involved in and sort of connect that those dots there, but also that sort of lack of institutional knowledge. Like, let's make an MLS Next where we literally have like Youth Champions League. I'm down.
They
send our players.
Kind of do that, yeah. Weeby.
Well, I know, but most of it's here, no? The big tournaments are played in the U.S.
A good chunk of it's in Mexico as well. The Liga MX MLS Academy connection is pretty strong, and most of these players, as they come through academies, have played a sizable amount of their games against Mexican clubs. It's one of the things that I think is helping some of these young players.
Okay.
Maybe not be the best, but like I think there is a level of confidence for some of these players because they've been there before. I would say a lot of these young players have played Club America, Chivas, Pachuca at the youth levels fairly often. A decent chunk of it's in the U.S., but a bunch of it's also in Mexico City, in Monterrey. They do travel there fairly often. I think Atlanta United basically was playing in Mexico once a month going into COVID at the youth levels.
But what do they know about Managua? What do they know about Esteli? Yeah,
no, it is a whole different monster. I don't think anyone's putting in games at the Cuscatlan every once in a while for 15-year-olds in the U.S. That would be a new one.
Yeah, but I think for clubs as well, like Atlanta United wants to be a continental big club, right? And they're going and getting players of that stature and competing with clubs in the transfer market for those types of players as well. And so I think for them specifically, and the way we saw LAFC really, I think, put themselves on the map even in a bigger way, there is some sort of confirmation that still is yet to sort of happen, but is progressing.
So here's something that gets me excited about if Columbus were to do, I think they are the favorites for an MLS team to get this done, is in my experience, when you talk to Liga MX fans and fans in Mexico, they say that Jovinko went to a CCL final and Vela's been to a CCL final. They like find ways to take it out of credit to MLS. These clubs are good. These were great teams. And they find like a butt to kind of like be like, whoa, Jovinko's a Champions League player. We respect him. Vela's a national team guy. We respect him. I understand Zelarayan's a star, but if this Columbus team were to do it, this is a top to bottom strong roster, well-built MLS team with all the pieces, with a Nagby, with players that they've brought in from Europe, with young American players, with MLS veterans like Giassi Zardes, with international stars like Zelarayan. So to me, this would almost break all of that because there's no way I think
Jonathan Osorio's coming through.
Yeah, right. What about Cameron Porter? Cameron Porter.
Picking out names from Montreal and RSL. It's like Javier Morales remains a legend down south. They will never forget Javier Morales. Let's just do this right now. Let's do it. Who has the best chance to win the CONCACAF Champions League among these five MLS teams this year? We're not saying they're going to do it. We're not predicting that it's going to happen. We got the reverse jinx or the jinx or however you want to define that up and rolling. Who is the team that has the best chance if all the stars align? Because we know even with the best teams in this league's history, that's had to happen. Who is the team? Start us off, Doyle. Who you got?
It's Columbus. Just because, again, no weak spots on that roster, depth everywhere, and in theory, three match winners who can do it on the big stage. That said, there's a really strong argument for Atlanta because if Joseph comes back 100%, and like he's Joseph, he can do it against anybody.
What about draw? Because that's the elephant in the room too. Because
yeah,
I mean, like, I like Atlanta United, but Alajuelense is a monster right now. Like they just are rolling everyone.
Yep.
And I think the Union could have a chance, and they actually got a decent draw among MLS teams. Saprissa's not at top Saprissa form. Maybe likely because Alajuelense is there right now. So then it is the Crew. It's Esteli. But then you have Monterrey next. Or maybe it's the Timbers because you have Maratón, who haven't been that great in Honduras in this clausura. But then you have America next, who have been just absolutely crushing everybody in Liga MX. It's just like there is a butt on all of these. And you open up that next door and there is somebody waiting to beat you down.
But on draw, Columbus, I think, has the best opportunity. One, they are the best team for an MLS team. Two, they are the team that is most consistent from last year. So again, this is in preseason for most MLS teams. You've got new coaches on some sides. You've got new star players or new central pieces like a Philadelphia. You've got injuries for Portland and Toronto, again, a new coach. So for Columbus, they're the most established. And then you've got an opportunity in the first round, I think an easier draw to get out. And while you do have Monterrey in the second round, Cruz Azul and America are the two best teams in this competition. And they avoid Cruz Azul at least to a semifinal and then America in the final. And one of the things I think with, remember Toronto's run, and they beat Tigres and they beat America and then they play Chivas, was like, you're always going to have to beat the big team. You're never going to avoid them completely. You're not getting a gift and getting an upset in a semifinal and, oh, you don't have to beat a big team in the final. So I think if you're going to meet America, that's where you want them. If you're going to meet Cruz Azul, that's where you want them. Columbus has an opportunity to get a couple weeks under their belt, build towards that. I think they have a reasonable first round draw. To your guys' point, I don't think Atlanta even makes it through against Alajuelense. I think they're the best team that an MLS team got drawn against, and Atlanta's not in a place to win a series like that. So it's set up, quote unquote, well, to Weeby's point, but you have to play three Liga MX teams potentially to win this. And that's, no one's ever beat three. Toronto got through 2.5, if you consider penalty kick shootouts that. So it's not easy, but it's still, it's set up for them. The one thing I worry about a little bit with Columbus is there's the good for them, which is they don't have a ton of players who play internationally for their countries, so they're able to stay together. But in this, I think players who have played internationally the last few weeks have more game under their belts because they've played at a high level since December. Columbus basically didn't have anyone that left for the last international window. So while they're able to stay together and work as a group, no one's gotten like a high level 90 minutes out since basically MLS Cup.
You look around the locker room, Kalen. You're on one of these teams. You're thinking, hey, maybe we could be the ones. What do you see? What would you need to see? And how? And in the beginning of the season, without a competitive game, because we're talking about the Crew, they just lost to Toronto 4-2 in preseason. Artur is injured, probably not going to play against SLE. Vita Wormgor is out. He's probably not going to play in this series as well. Like, it's not perfect for them.
Well, I mean, the main thing that I think I struggle with, and this is kind of always the case, is just the timing of when this all happens. So you really need, and that's why I was saying, and I agree, I think Atlanta's has a really tough one with Alajuelense, but I think if you can get past, if you can just get past the first one somehow, and then you get healthy, then you get Joseph, and you know, you mentioned Vela, you mentioned Jovinko, Joseph is like of that class as well too, and so you need to sort of, I don't think the expectation if you're in the locker room is to say we're going to be our best right away. That's just not realistic for where you're at in the preseason or match fitness or anything like that. But if you can just sort of get through it and then you get your star players back, I think even for a Portland, maybe you get Blanco back, you give yourselves a better chance as it goes, but you have to be realistic. You're not going to be able to get all the way through this all at once. And I think even for teams, it's tough because even looking ahead, like, the beginning of the season is super important for MLS as well too, for Open Cup.
Yeah.
Otherwise, so it's like you can't really throw everything at one competition and then sacrifice the next, which then starts to spiral and suddenly you're off to a bad start, and we've seen teams really struggle with that in the past.
Look, it is in some ways a preseason sort of run out for these teams. They haven't had competitive games. This is the first one. Now, I would not recommend saying that publicly. But in some ways it is, and that is the challenge for MLS, and that's why we kind of have to protect our hearts and be, what was it, the line there, Kalen? It was
cautiously pessimistic.
Yes, yeah. We're cautiously pessimistic about this tournament. I think that is a very good way to put it. Let's jump into our previews. Again, we're going in order of, just based on the column that I wrote, because it was easy to do here, who has the best chance? I think we agreed it's Columbus Crew FC, so we'll start there. Here is your haiku, which you've waited for all weekend long. To win on four fronts is not possible for most. Most are not massive.
That might have been one of your best ones. That a way to end on a high.
Yeah, well, there's two more. So just let me, we haven't ended yet. There's two more. But that was one of the ones I was the most proud of. Columbus, I do think, has a chance to be a historic team. They have four fronts, assuming they get into the Open Cup and they handle business at the beginning of the season. They have the possibility to do something that nobody else has done before. They're that deep. They're that good. Now, it does start difficult. Thursday is when they kick off their CCL campaign at Real Esteli, FS1, 7 p.m. Eastern. Then it's the next Thursday, the 15th, Crew at home against Esteli. Second leg, again on FS1. I'm going to repeat FS1 a lot because that's where these games are. That's where you can watch, 7 p.m. Eastern. And then they go Sunday against Philly at home, again on FS1. So this team's going to live on FS1. Key signings, Kevin Molino, Bradley Art Phillips. We talked about that. We have not talked much about Alexandru Matan, who came in with a reputation that I think was bigger than maybe the coverage that we gave him, and their expectations probably bigger, though he will be more of a reserve to start, it would seem. Evan Bush, Marlon Hairston, look, you win, you're going to win. You're going to start winning in the free agent market as well. In MLS, Evan Bush is coming home. He gives good depth behind Eloy Room. Marlon Hairston can be a backup at right back or even in the midfield as well. We know he is a movement legend, Marlon Hairston. Isaiah Parente came in for depth as well. When you look at their season, and we'll focus on Esteli at the very end here as we think about predictions, and what they've done in the offseason, what message did Tim Bezpachinko send, Doyle, in your opinion?
We're good, and we know that we can still get better, but it doesn't have to be by going down the traditional avenues that MLS teams look. Like these guys, if you look at the types of players they added, and you just listed a bunch of them, they are primarily MLS veterans who know what it takes to win in this league. And that is how you pad out an already championship level roster. Now, the one flyer they took was on the Matan, and I'm not sure that I'm putting the accent on the right syllable there, but he will.
We don't even, syllables aren't even our strong point.
Yeah, it's definitely not our strong point.
A lot of clapping last night.
But even that is like they went out and they got one really high upside young player, but not to the point where he's overshadowing the guys who are already there. So I just think everything that he did this offseason shows confidence in the group that he already had on hand. And that is exactly what I would do if I was a GM trying to maintain what looks like it could be a potential dynasty. If you look at this crew team, they are set up to do this for the next 5 years what Toronto's done for the last five.
And you could argue that they won early. Like, they probably didn't expect to win MLS Cup last year in their process, which means that most of the contracts are already set for a few years. Yep. So you don't get eaten by the salary cap monster right at the beginning of winning. It's not like they won and then had that thing where they celebrate, and as they leave the locker room, they have to cut five guys and then go to a trophy celebration because of the way I think it went down. And so it worked out perfect for them. And to Doyle's point, not only can they pad, but they don't have to take risks that other teams have to take, which is you have some clubs who look at themselves this year and say, we need a number 9, we need a legit 10, and they have to sign those players in a year in which you can't really travel, you can't really meet those guys. And for Columbus, they just brought in a bunch of players they already know, like players who have played in MLS that they've either already interacted with, the coaching staff or the front office, or people they know have, and they already can trust can compete in this league. And so they obviously bring in the one young signing so far, and they'll probably, I would assume, fill those out as like a way to start to build it towards the future. But from the first team competitive point of view, they don't have to risk, oh, we need a spot to fill, let's pull someone in from Europe and hope that it goes well. I mean, we're going to talk about Philly, Stuart Finley. He's barely even here yet, and they're going into CCL. And on the flip side, for Columbus, they're able to pull in a Molino and a BWP who are here, understand what's going on, understand the league, and they can trust that they're going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, easy convincing too for the front office to convince free agents and players to come, which hasn't always been the case in Columbus. But with the new stadium, with the amount of games too, even if you're talking to players that may not be or that are looking to start, you're going to be able to rotate a lot or have to rotate a lot with the range of competitions they're in. So yeah, there's a lot of excitement there. And I really like these. Molino is probably the one that stands out the most as far as a player that could really take them even to another level. And then, of course, they've got some young players too that, like you're saying, they're developing that project, like Aiden Morris and some other guys that we've seen some really bright stuff, but we haven't really seen them really emerge maybe into this next step of their progression.
You would think that Aiden Morris would get another opportunity here. He showed so much in MLS Cup, but Artur is out. He is, based on all the reporting from the Columbus Dispatch, Artur will not play probably in both legs against Esteli. So you would think it would be Nagbe and Morris. Maybe Perry Kitchen would get a run in there.
You want an early Free Spaces disappointment moment? An hour before the first Columbus game, lineup comes out. Perry Kitchen, captain's armband. David Goss's heart turns to black, and he falls over off his couch. And
dude, you got to get that. You got to get that 2010 Akron team back together and get them into
what's Ben Zemanski doing right now? Is he ready for a CCL run out?
I have a lot of references I could make there. It would get us bogged down for even longer we have. But look, I mean, that is, but Perry Kitchen, we joke, but for Caleb, that's pure trust. He has pure trust in that. And Perry's seen a lot of these environments. He's been there. He's done it. He's not going to be overawed. But that goes to this team, what they've done. And I think it's more than this offseason. We know that. We talked about it over and over. It's this build. When Bezbachinko got there, when Caleb got there, of multiple windows to get to where you want to be, whether it be Zelarayan or Diaz or Santos coming good. I know he wasn't necessarily their guy, but he did come good, and so did Zardes. Holding on, prioritizing Jonathan Mensah, saying, you are our guy, like getting Eloy room. They have not slowly, pretty rapidly built this into, as you said, Doyle, a potential dynasty to come. Now, the star spotlight, I think, has to be Lucas Ellerón. It's not really a question mark. What he did in MLS Cup, what he can do, it's above and beyond anybody else on the roster, despite there also being star potential in Giassi Zardes or Pedro Santos or Luis Diaz or Kevin Molino, and for Dave's sake, Dab God as well. Lucas Ellerón.
Dab God on the wings.
This could be this could be fun. Like, I want to see the Monterrey matchup in this competition, because it would be two incredible teams, but also because it would be Zellerón's opportunity to come back and be like, look what you missed.
Well, I think that's what it's going to be, this whole competition for him. Like, this is his chance to go there and say, I should have been a starter at Tigres the whole time. I'm a star. I went to MLS and succeeded. I'm confident. For him to come back and kind of dunk on Liga MX and say, you can't forget about me. And I didn't move down or sideways. I moved up in my career. And so that's why I think you're going to see him playing with an edge in this one, which I love, because he's one of those players who plays better in those moments. Some players, it takes them out of their own game. I think he rises to those occasions, and I think it's a huge opportunity for him to just get on this stage and be like, I am one of, or if not the best player in this region. I know that's how good I am, and I know that this is what I can do.
You think he leaves the sock just a little bit low on the calf with the MLS Cup trophy?
I wouldn't if it was me.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, like, save some room. Maybe you got a CCL trophy.
Other calf?
I feel like whichever MLS team is the first to do it, the entire team has to get, like,
I feel like extra time tattoos, needs to do
right?
it.
Yeah, that's actually probably
after
true.
Everything you that you guys have been through.
In the private chat, which we really need to get this thing public, Anders just said he would get the tattoo of CCL trophy if they want it.
So. No, you misread that. It was the crest of whatever team wins,
and with the star
right,
for CCL.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah,
so
I couldn't read that.
It can't be Seattle this year. So good luck, Anders, if that comes to pass. Let's see. 2222. It's Aiden Morris. That's the guy, right? He's the one to watch in this case. What do you expect this year out of Aiden Morris? Who's got a big proclamation, or who's got something reasonable? Like, what's the next peg in his development?
So it's tough to say exactly, because young players traditionally don't get a ton of time on veteran teams that have championship aspirations. So he's going to have to look like he will have to earn every minute. I would expect him all competitions to play somewhere between 1,000 or 1,500 minutes. If he plays as well as he did in MLS Cup, that number will go up. It will go up rapidly. And just from a U.S. national team perspective, I posed this question to a group chat that I'm in filled with U.S. national team lunatic fans, asking, like, what if one American player could have the type of Brendan Aaronson type rise that he had last year, who would be the best one in terms of helping the national team? And they pretty unanimously agreed it was Aiden Morris, just because of his ability to win the ball, to go into the cage match and win that cage match no matter who he's playing against, and then make, like, quick, decisive passes to get the team going upfield. He has all those skill sets that you look for from a D mid, and it's like, it's Tyler Adams-esque. So what I hope to see from him this year is that he gets out there for a good amount of minutes and applies that game after game after game, and you stop forgetting that he's just 19 years old. And that's what happened for Tyler Adams back in 2018. And, like, that's what we need to see from Aiden Morris this year.
The "this is fine" meme, little dog.
Can I take
coffee?
2 seconds to just bring up, like, Sam Sarver and Elton Chifamba, and, like, this isn't going to be FC Dallas 2.0. But there's pieces in that Columbus Academy that they're excited about. They brought all of them into preseason to play with their first team. A lot of guys have done well. And this is a group that's going to have more Academy kids playing significant minutes over the next 2-3 years. And it's a focus for this front office, which is pretty exciting.
Again, the "this is fine" meme. To me, it's honestly, it's just them being like the bottom drop side is like if they're just average good and not champion good, like that. That's how high I think roster and this group.
So we think the floor for this team is being like a 55 or 60 point MLS team, doesn't really compete for the Shield, but they're pretty good and everybody's worried like, oh, you don't want to draw the Crew in the playoffs. Like that is the floor.
Yeah. I think like average, yeah. We're like, yeah, it's a playoff team, but like it's not, they're not exciting you. They're not showing you that gear that they had in the playoffs, where you're like, uh-oh, watch out, as you said, for the next 5 years. It's if they're just like, it just kind of stagnated. It didn't work for whatever reason. Maybe it's injuries, that's often the case. Maybe it's lack of form. Maybe it's international
breaks. My guess
would
be if this happens.
But they seem to have protected themselves from that.
Well, if this happens, one of the things that'll be is Molino will be hurt this year, because I think the only way I see this going down, unless they have a ton of injuries, is for some reason they're not as goal dangerous as we want them to be, because a lot of teams are going to sit deep on this team and say, beat us. And as Doyle has pointed out on the show many times, Nagby's not super goal dangerous. And so if you get yourself in a situation where you're playing against packed in teams, it's not where Zardes is hit at his best. If Molino is hurt, it falls a lot on Zelrayan and Pedro Santos. That's the world in which I see us feeling going into the playoffs, that this team's kind of struggling and there is a game, blueprint to beat them and things like that. That's really, unless everyone gets hurt and Mensah's hurt and Nagby's hurt and Zellera, and then yeah, that's just the reality.
Is this season a disappointment if Columbus doesn't add at least one trophy?
I think so. I do. I personally think so. I think in the world of competitive sports, when you have Zellerion and Zardes and you have Santos, Molino, Diaz, Mensah, all these pieces, a lot of them in their prime or in sort of like this form moment, what's the point if you're just like, oh, well, this year went by, we didn't get it done. Like that's okay for teams that are trying to build toward it, but this is what you're trying to build towards, is to win and to think you have a team to win in every competition you're in.
I have trouble saying that it'd be a disappointment. I don't think I can go that far, just because, I mean, they coming off of an MLS Cup, opening a brand new stadium, an exciting project that looks like it's set for years to come. Like CCL is going to be difficult. We kind of ran through that. You know, Open Cup, say you miss like one or two, you have a, because of CCL, you pick up an injury, and then in the first couple games, you slip up a match or two. It's, you know, things can, and then the supporter shield is always a tough one. I think this team has the depth to do it, but they feel more of a team that's going to be, I think they'll be around the top of the East around it, but I just don't know if they're going to be at the supporter shield level. MLS Cup, I could definitely see them being the favorites. I'll probably pick them as my favorite for this year as well, but I can't say so far that would be a disappointment. I think they're going to be a really exciting team that plays like consistent, good soccer all year, and opening that stadium. So I can't quite go that far.
Yeah, I think it's fair to hang the banner and have a new stadium, to have the rest of your future laid out in front of you and have it look positive. I still think internally you would be disappointed. You would say, man, we had an opportunity. And if you don't get it done, you have to
be disappointed. The expectations are for trophies. Yeah. That's a good thing.
I'm going to nitpick real quick on the This Is Fine, then we'll go on to the CCL matchup here. I think the place that I see on the roster that might be the most is center back, but then Josh Williams steps in and starts every playoff game. And then
you also can't say that about
Keita and Vita Wormgore. We don't know, because he was hurt basically all of last year. Like, I think it's more just an unknown to me.
I think it's actually right back. I'm fine with their center back rotation, but like Harrison Offal turns 35. He's so important to everything they do. Like, what if he suddenly gets old? We've seen it happen. Like, it happened to Chad Marshall. He got old overnight and then he retired. So what happens if Harrison Offal suddenly gets old? They brought in Marlon Harrison, who I've loved his potential as a right back over the years, but nobody's ever played him there consistently. So that would be a big ask if you go from a guy who I think is actually the best right back in MLS history, Harrison Offal, to a guy who has never actually started there. And especially given how important the fullbacks are in Caleb Porter's system. So that is the one to keep an eye on. And I really think they need to manage Harrison Offal's minutes.
All right, let's get to it. We all agree this is a championship potential contending team in MLS, whether it be Shield, depending on how the season goes for them. We all know that Shield can have some interesting variables, whether it be injury or form, and that back half of the year with the pack schedule is going to make the difference. Certainly MLS Cup. Real Esteli, they're doing pretty good in the Nicaraguan First Division right now. I mean, it's a really top-heavy league, so you have like four teams that just whoop everybody else, and that's where it's at right now. I think they were fourth the last time I checked, but they had a plus 13 goal differential, have a ton of Nicaraguan internationals on that team, including the captain of Juan Barrera. Got through to this competition via the CONCACAF League, but on paper, it's pretty clear that the Crew are big favorites here. Now, that doesn't mean that much. We've seen that repeatedly. That just because you're favorites doesn't mean you're going to get the job done. I think about Independiente, the Panamanian Independiente in recent vintage. We all think they get through against Esteli. Yay? Nay?
How do we think?
How do we think
they're going to have most of the ball? I think it's going to be Esteli is probably used to having the ball in their league, and I think Columbus is going to dominate the ball, and that's going to be difficult for Esteli to be able to cope with. They're not used to that, and I think that that's a Columbus, we've seen what they've been able to do with it. I think it's going to really unbalance things. And I see them getting through.
Kevin Molino has had some hamstring issues. He just got back into the team. I think he played like 35 minutes recently, and it says he's just sort of easing in. Caleb Porter did say that doesn't really feel like they, are meshing completely yet. I mean, understandably, it is the preseason. Does that have any concerns at all about upset potential in this game?
Yeah, there's always... There's always concerns about upset potential, but it's a two-legged affair, right? And I trust Columbus's defenders, defensive midfielders, and goalkeeper to make sure that if they are on the wrong side of a scoreline, that it doesn't get out of hand, and then they get the second game to make the point that they should be considered one of the favorites in this tournament.
Thursday. At Real Esteli in Nicaragua, FS1, 7 p.m. Eastern. That is, I believe, the final of all five MLS games. So we might be on Spaces. We might not. We'll see what strikes our fancy. Just check Twitter. Doyle's got it hooked up. So do I. So if you see us rolling, you know we're talking CCL. Let's move it on. I think the Portland Timbers have the second best opportunity to win this competition. Here is their haiku. Let's see if I can hold my high standards. Go tell Father Time that Diego's never age. In this, the Rose City. No, not as much of a... Okay, fine. I like that one, too.
There's like a... You really captured a sense of optimism, but foreboding at the same time. Like, the duality I think that one is going to hit better on second and third read. So
plus, for only so many syllables, you got two Diegos for the price of one. So
that's true. Yeah, that's
efficiency.
Helpful.
That's high efficiency.
Very
right
helpful
there.
To me.
The second spectrum numbers on that are pretty good.
The expected syllables hit them bang on. Tuesday, Marathon at Marathon in Honduras, FS1, 5 p.m. Eastern. This is the first game for an MLS side in the competition. I think it might actually start the competition. 5 p.m. Eastern seems like a strange time. It is perfect here in Weeby CCL basement world. No kids, no nothing. I'm watching that game. Nothing can distract me. Let's go. Then the next Tuesday, they host Marathon on FS1 at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then on the Sunday of MLS Cup opening weekend, they're at Vancouver, a.k.a. in Utah, on TSN and ESPN Plus at 9 p.m. Eastern. What is this competition for the Timbers, do we think? Like, how much does it matter? How much will they prioritize it? I believe Sebastian Blanco has traveled to Honduras with the team. What do you think this competition means to them?
I have no idea, quite honestly.
Really? They've been pretty outspoken about how they want to be the first MLS team to win it.
But they don't have their DP center forward. Blanco hasn't played a game in 8 months. They have two new signings at fullback. Like, they're a good team. They should compete. They have an opportunity, but this isn't the season for them, right? And this isn't maybe the year they're set up to get it done because of the way they are coming into this. Again, two DPs that one's not going to be there and the other one hasn't played in a sizable amount of time. So I wouldn't be shocked if Portland did well in this competition. It was the second best, but I think for this year, MLS Cup should be their goal the way the calendar seems to fall for them.
I think that's fair. I think the point about the DPs is a really good one because you have to have that sort of game-changing talent to get through some of these League MX teams and to have the moments that give you the wiggle room that inevitably MLS teams and every team in this competition needs. And if you don't have Blanco, which we know he is the one, though Diego Valeri, don't count him out. Don't count on Obobese. I mean, Felipe Mora is a full international. They still have the talent.
They have depth to cover for that most MLS teams do not, which is why I can hem and haw on this. Because another team loses their 10 and their number 9 DP, and there's no chance. As you said, Felipe Moore is a Liga MX player, and Jeremy Obobese should be a national team guy, whether he is or not, question mark. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Diego Valeri that you can put in and cover for a lot of those things. So they have the ability to do it even with these injuries, but they're not set up for it because their best player is missing.
New outside backs, you mentioned it, Claudio Bravo from Banfield. They really like him. Think he might be the best left back in the league. No, we'll have to see, of course.
Oh, Weeby, have they said that?
They did that?
I haven't heard that.
I don't know. Have I said that? I don't think I have.
No.
Not
everyone
once.
In Portland has said that 37 times.
I keep repeating it for him to set the expectations. Yeah. That way, you know, if he lives up, then they're all right. Right back, Jose Carlos Van Renken from Chivas. So, again, he has experience in this competition. You would look at those two guys and say, okay, well, you make those signings in part because this is the sort of thing that you want to win, and you got unlucky with the Blanco injury and Nizhgoda as well. When you look at the roster, Kalen, we talked all about the crew and the depth, and we love it, and this, that, and the other. I mean, this team has a lot of the same – they have a lot of the same sort of themes going on, but they do have the theme of Father Time, Mabiala, Chara, Valeri.
Today is Chara's 35th birthday.
Happy birthday.
So what, in like real people years, he's what, 25, 26?
Right? The age is low.
Yeah. He's like just about to hit his prime.
Felicidad. Yeah.
Well, I think what they're realizing, and they got in, of course, for CCL through the MLS's back tournament, but I think they're going to realize, I mean, even after getting in the last time they were in the tournament, I believe they had a pretty early exit where they made some mistakes and dropped out. And you just realize you don't get these opportunities much. And I think CCL is a tournament that has grown in stature and importance from obviously when I was playing, where it was at times not really an afterthought or not really the idea that a team was going to go on to win it at that point outside of Salt Lake's, you know, incredible run. But I think like for this Portland team, they do have ambitions that they want to go for this, and they're going to have to try and survive and get Blanco back. But they have the depth, like you said, I think, to be able to at least give it a good go. And as far as the age goes, I think the age actually helps in this tournament specifically, where it's if you have that experience, you have Diego Valeri, you have Diego Chara, like that's unquantifiable. Like you asked what I would like to look down and see in the locker room going into CCL to start the season when you haven't had a preseason and you're not quite ready. I'd like to see the two Diegos. That would be that would make you feel really good. Now, is that going to be able to last, and will they all be able to stay healthy and fit throughout the season? That's still a big question. But for CCL to begin with, I think that actually is that age and experience will help them in this case.
How about the star spotlight here? Who would we talk about right now? I mean, we would talk about Sebastian Blanco, but then you're talking about what they could be with him as opposed to what they might be without him in this competition.
Right. And we're not even sure that Valeri is going to start these CCL games against Marathon. I think they're kind of easing him into it. You know, Diego Chara, he's obviously going to be out there, and he is obviously the most important player, but he's not necessarily the star.
You also would assume the two teams for the two legs will be much different between first week playing on that surface, risking these guys, to second week when you're at home. I think that's another thing we'll probably see in this series.
How would you
just steal a goal?
We'll skip ahead here. How would you set up if you're Giovanni Savarese in Honduras? Let's say you're protecting Valeri, maybe.
You probably start Laria. You maybe start Andy Polo. Andy Polo is a guy that Gio Savarese trusts pretty heavily, covers a ton of ground, works pretty hard for him. And then you're kind of relying on Yimi Chara to help create for you, Williamson sort of connecting the lines, and Jeremy Obobese and Mora as well, which I think should be enough for them to get a good enough result in the first leg. They don't have the depth, I don't know, that Columbus does, but they still have a lot of pieces that can win them a match at this level.
I mean, this team, I'm looking at the depth chart right now. It's this team's good. Pretty deep. Like, they're pretty deep.
So is there a... Yeah, I guess so. If you take Zeller Ayana, it still feels like there's two or three match winners on Columbus. Yimi Chara could be that guy. He wasn't for most of last year. He got better as the year went along. Outside of him,
I mean, if you take Blanco out, yeah, you know, if you lose this team's best player, which we saw, they were still what, the third best team in the West last year. They still had Diego Valeri. They, you know, they lost their DP forward. They still have Obobese and Mora. They, you know, Chara, Yimi Chara. struggled at the start of his career, but by the start of his MLS career, but by the end of the season, he was one of the more dangerous wingers in the league. So I think this team is kind of stacked, even with the injuries and even with resting guys. It's just a matter of Giuseppe Arese getting them up for these games, getting them in the right shape, and then fixing what killed them last year, which was the final 15 minutes of games, they would fall apart. They would absolutely fall apart. They were one of, if not the worst team in the league in the final 15 minutes of games. And we saw it against Dallas in the playoffs. Like, this team was not able to protect leads and see out results in the way that, A, they did in July in Orlando in the MLS's back tournament, and B, in the way that you would expect a veteran team to do. Because it's not just Chara and Valeri, and like Blanco's 33, Larrys Malviala is 33 or 34. Like, they have a lot of guys with a lot of experience all up that spine, and it didn't serve them as well as you would have thought to in terms of closing out games and doing the stuff that you expect from veteran teams.
That's basically the "this is fine" meme. We got a question here from Jeff who says, Timber's upside equals age and experience. Timber's downside equals age. Which will win out?
So can I just throw out another "this is fine"?
Yeah.
Before we move on into this question, great question. Gio Savarese has – one of the things Portland struggled with under Gio's time is whenever they have good spells, as other teams figure them out, it takes them a really long time to then find the next thing. So they'll play well for four or five games. Teams will adjust to what they do, and then it will take them a while to get their feet again. So that's why I don't think this is a supporter shield contender. For that reason, as well as Blanco coming back, Nir Skoda coming back over the course of a long season, age, you know they're going to manage minutes. But that's not where Portland has been at. And for CCL and MLS Cup, that's Gio's bread and butter, which is, I don't really care. I can gut out a result. I trust my guys. We've gotten big results. We can pull a piece of magic out of nowhere. That's not long-term season. And so I think that would be my "this is finest." You know, teams figure out how to frustrate them. They're not able to create chances. And then you see a team that starts to get frustrated with itself.
I think they should just go counter in this competition, get through Maratona, and then just try to counter. Just be the team that
fine wins. In CCL, but in MLS, yeah, I know. Not every team's going to allow Portland to sit back and counter. No, agreed.
I'm just saying, America, you could do that, but that's what they should 100%. Do in this competition. What do you think on age, Kalen? When would you be concerned about age with this team? I know you look across, you see the Diegos, you love it, and it doesn't feel like it will ever end, but sometime it does. Does that mean, like we were talking about Columbus, does that mean there's more pressure on Portland this year to win because they're more of an, let's say, and it will be nice and say an experienced?
I look at the pieces that you put around age to see how you account. And I think Eric Williamson, I think, has been sort of, we saw last year how he can help Diego Chara, and he can provide somebody that can, you know, cover a ton of ground, help move the ball forward, take a little bit off Diego's plate. It's funny because I feel like he doesn't want anything off his plate, but then you start seeing, like, you know, Jeremy and how he, if he can come do a little bit more of the work, hold up play, and that might free up Diego Valeri to play more, you know. So I think when you look at age, you have to look at how you're using the pieces around them too, because I played with a lot of older players, Brian McBride later on in his career, others, and if you put young people around them, I remember Patrick Nyarko was a good example of a guy that was able to, I think, give life to McBride or give life to older players that come around, or I felt that way at times with Blanco. That if you put good pieces around them, you can still get a lot more out of them. So I'm a little bit less concerned because of some of the younger players that they've introduced as well.
Here's a question that I just have been sitting here mulling while we've been talking through this after we did Columbus. Which midfield would you take? Williamson and Chara, like deep lying, or Nagby and Artur / Aiden Morris?
I would take Portland's. I would take Williamson and Chara, and then the Aiden Morris role is
Paredes, who's one of Paredes. the better of the better backup midfielders in this league.
Like, he's a full Paraguay international, yeah. You know?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what they did with Williamson in the offseason says a lot. I mean, there was a lot of effort that went into re-signing him to a new contract and making sure he was there. He waited for his opportunity for a long time. He got it. There are no 22 under 22 really candidates here. That's just the deal. Like you look up and down the roster, that's the deal. I mean, Williamson is the closest and he's aged out. I'm not even sure he's quote unquote adjacent at this point, because usually we say it's got to be within kind of a year, or at least that's the arbitrary number I put in my head.
Isn't Benia? Of course, Benia is just a backup this year, right?
Yeah. I mean, so there you go. There you go. There it is. All right. Let's go. Predictions. What's this team going to be? Quickly in MLS, but what will they be in CCL? Are they going to get through Maratona onto the next round? I would say yes. And then America is probably just too much, but I would say that about just about MLS, any MLS team that faced America at this point.
I can agree with that. I was trying to find my standings real quick as you guys were talking.
All right, just to be clear, Benia is 22 under 22 eligible. So anyway,
there you go.
I picked them for second in the Western Conference. I think they have so much top end quality. I'm not going to bet against the Diegos keeping it going for another year. I'm not going to bet against Sebastian Blanco coming back and being close to what he was last year. I'm not going to bet against their forward rotation. And I thought what Jimmy Chara showed down the stretch last year, he was electric. I think this is just a really, really good team. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them win at least one trophy this year. I would almost be more surprised if they didn't figure out a way to win one.
I had them third in my standings right now. So I think second, third, between them and Minnesota, those are the two that I kind of have trading those spots. So everything I said, everything to Doyle's point, I do question them at times over the course of a long season, but I still think there's enough quality and they're one of the better teams in this league that teams are going to struggle with them and they're going to be able to put up points over the course of the season.
Andres is yelling at us. He says, move on. So we got to do it. Toronto FC, I think, is the third most likely team to make a run. I know Club Leon off the jump is a difficult proposition, but they have the star power. They have the experience in this competition. You could argue that, that this group, you know, maybe there are pieces of this group that are on the back end of being able to compete at this level, but I think they could get it together and do it. Club Leon is not America. They're not Cruz Azul. They're not Monterrey. It is possible.
They're struggling this year, man.
Yeah.
Like they won the title last year and they have a real big hangover.
Wednesday at Leon on FS1, 7 p.m. Eastern. And then the next Wednesday, the 14th, they got Leon at home.
And it's that classic CCL run. They're going to beat Leon, then Cruz Azul, then Monterrey, then Club America with a new coach. And zero depth in half the team. I look forward to it.
Yeah, and look, hey, Josie's back. He scored in preseason. But Chris Armas has been saying that it's a little... They're not exactly on the same page, is what he's said so far. And that's not exactly what you want to hear, but that is super understandable, given that there is some sort of foundational change happening there and the way they want to play. But when you have Pozuelo and you have Altidore and maybe a very motivated Josie Altidore, and the other pieces they have, throw out Jonathan Osorio if we're going to keep our movement references rolling. I mean, this is an experienced team. It's a team that in large part has been there and done it in the region in this competition. They could absolutely get past Leon and get a run going. Like, did I peg them right in the middle of the pack here? Or would you have put Philly or Atlanta above them?
I think I would have put Philly over them, even though I don't think Philly has a great shot, just the way the draw came.
Yeah, the draw's a wood chipper.
Yeah.
Okay. So... All right, what are you looking for in the series? Kalen, anything you look at this team and say, I want to see that, I'm looking forward to that, like off the jump, Liga MX, this is, ultimately this is what we all want out of CCL in a lot of ways.
I mean, I think with the new manager, with Armas coming in, just getting a peek at what he wants to shift and change, and, you know, there's been some reports coming out, I haven't seen him play in preseason or anything like that, but just how they're going to use Michael as well is a big one. I've looked at maybe trying to put him in a more advanced position, it sounds like. And get a little bit back to getting him around goal, which I actually think is a really good thing. I think I like the idea of it and getting more out of him. I don't know why, but when I saw that Jackson Yule goal, where he sort of
it was a Michael Bradley goal.
Yeah,
100% a Michael Bradley goal.
Yeah, he comes in outside of the foot to the back post. Like Michael has that quality for sure. So then you start seeing Pozuelo, because I think Michael would still stay in the middle of the pitch as he comes through, but that allows Pozuelo to kind of drift as he does anyways into different spots. So I'm really more interested in anything to see how Armas kind of lines his team up and how he uses Michael and kind of like a first peek at what this new Toronto team will look like.
I agree with Kalen. I would add Oso in that, because I think he's going to get to be closer to goal. He's going to be a little bit more goal dangerous this year. And we've seen it throughout his career, but he's, you know, kind of done whatever Toronto needed at whatever time period, whether it was coming deeper and helping, being pushed further wide, whatever it is. I think this is going to be a pretty comfortable position for him. And when I look at this team, I think we talked about in their profile, sort of like a Danny Royer role, maybe less of a pure scorer, but that off the center forwards, some freedom to create underneath them and to just find the game. And I'm excited because Oso's developed so much each year, and that's that next step. And it could be a good spot for him in Canada as well with the Canadian national team. So it could fit really well this year.
Give me back.
But then the question is how do they build out of the, how do they build? Cause you're so used to seeing Michael come pick up the ball at every time. And if he's going to play at a more advanced role, then what does that build out look like? Who, and does Pozuelo then get forced into dropping back a little bit more than he should to kind of like we've seen Ladero at times in the past too, or is he able to stay advanced? So I don't know. I got a lot of questions on how they're going to do it.
Well, we'll see Wednesday. Club Lyon, FS1, 7 p.m. Eastern. The game before that is the Union's CCL debut. I think for me, they're the fourth most likely team to make a run again. I just have Toronto FC there. I think they're top in talent.
Can I just ask you this?
Yeah.
If Philly hadn't sold Mark McKenzie and Brendan Aaronson right now, where would you have them and what would you think?
I would have them.
I'd have them second.
Yeah, I think second. And I think to me, it would be probably more about Aaronson than McKenzie.
Interesting.
But that's, I don't know.
Losing McKenzie might end up shifting the way they build out of the back. Because he was, I mean, look, Jack Elliott is a really good distributor of the ball, but McKenzie was just, I mean, a different level with that. I still like what this Union team has. I think Elliott's obviously a plug and play for McKenzie. Some questions at right back. I mean, Regatis was not the most dynamic player in the world, but he was reliable as hell. And so that is a variable that is, it's less than ideal to have to account for that going into CCL play. And then, you know, Anthony Fontana is going to be the number 10. Jim Curtin has said it. He's, what, 21, 22 years old. He scored 2 goals in a preseason friendly the other day. He scored 6 goals in like 800 minutes last year. He is really, really good at finding those spots in the box. He doesn't do much else. Like, he does not connect dangerous passes. He doesn't beat people off the dribble. He's not a great defender like Aaronson was. How quickly he can add that sort of stuff to his game at, like, a decent level might end up going a long way towards determining not just how far Philly go in this tournament, but what their season looks like as a whole.
Kind of sounds strange to say that they got a little bit lucky with Saprissa, like in a Costa Rican sense.
This is a nightmare matchup for them. Saprissa is a down team, but it's the most veteran group, like maybe in this competition for any team. I mean, this is a team that's every name you've ever heard from Saprissa or Costa Rica is in this group right now.
And everyone's going to have 34. Who's going to be the one that stabs us in the back? Is it going to be Christian Bolaños? Who's going to give us the, who's going to be the former MLS that you're like, you would.
Yeah. Kendall Waston in this group, David Guzman as well. Jimmy Marin, who I think is an up and coming player for Costa Rica that I'm excited about on the wings. And then it's just like every single veteran straight up the spine for this group. So They're struggling. It's not a good Saprissa side right now. This isn't the best team they've had. But at the same time, everything that they have is what Philly doesn't. Experience in this competition, experience in CONCACAF, experience as a group. And then you've got Philly coming in, which they're not as young as they were last year in that starting lineup, but they've never been here before.
We'll see what they do. Wednesday at Saprissa. Started off in a special way. They're going to age 5 years, according to Zarek Valentin.
Sure. By the way, should Philly fans panic at all if they go 2-0 out in this?
No. Okay. No. They should be super excited and proud that they are here and savor the moment. And everything that comes is a bonus, I think. I don't think. Okay. Yeah, unless they get absolutely wiped, that might hurt. But if they're competitive, I think it's all good. Atlanta United, Anders says we got to make sure we have time for them. You know, like. Fine. Here we go. We'll see if I can end on another high note here. I felt decent about these. The father is back. New manager, new teammates. Is the soul back too? So I think that's the big question for Atlanta United, which they kind of lost under Frank DeBoer, of what they want to be as a club and what they want to be as far as a playing style, is what they want to sort of emote as a team and as players, this aggressive swagger, like, come get us, we are the standard bearer mentality that they had developed over a couple of years. And it was really fun and awesome, and their fans loved it, and other fans were tired of their fans loving it and us pushing it. But, I mean, it was there. Can El Gringo, can Gabriel Heinze bring that back? Can he?
I mean, first things first is, like, Weeby nailed these haikus today, guys.
Yeah. Like, I was going to say, well done.
Yeah. Clap a little bit. You were not clapping into the microphone very well.
Doyle, it's more snaps. You got snaps.
True. The amazing thing. I mean, it's the combination of art and math. I mean, it's like, it's sort of a perfect, it's perfect for extra time, right? Because it's this combining of two different disparate forces coming together into a beautiful painting.
He's both watching the
that
game.
Weeby's drawing.
And looking at the stats.
Exactly. Yeah. And also the potential for just a complete train wreck, which would then be completely on brand for us as well. But I think that's what it is for them. Aluente?
Is your biggest bromance love Joseph Martinez in MLS?
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
Joseph Orlando storyline, I think, might be your number one.
It might be. And I have a lot. I'm really, yeah, like, I got a lot of shrines.
That's a deep pool to fall from.
You know, Mindy always jokes with me. She's like, you know, nobody can see anything other than what's behind you. They can't see the absolute madness that's going on in the rest of this office. And I keep it that way intentionally. But I think MLS is demonstrably better with Joseph Martinez at his swaggering best, scoring goals, saying, you have to watch me. And honestly, Orlando fans hate this, and they hate Joseph, and they hate Atlanta, and they hate this storyline. But that elevated you when you were nothing. Like, when you were just, like, being dragged through the mud, Joseph elevated you. I know you don't want to hear that aspect of it, but he did that to both Orlando and a lot of other teams as well, and certainly with Atlanta. I also love the fact that he's just, like, unapologetically, this is my squad now, this is my club, Atlanta's my city, watch me roll my Bugatti or my, like, Lambo or my, like, Mercedes truck around. And just,
Audi. Yeah. Audi on Continental tires.
100%.
Yes. Well, Audi A4.
Time out. It was assumed that any vehicle being driven anywhere in the world is wrapped in Continentals. That's not even a question. We'd even think that it could
standard
be something
on Bugattis,
else.
Yeah.
Is wrong. Shout out to Continental and everything you've done for us. We love you. We will always love you. But yeah, no, it's good. And it's great to have him back. And it's great to have him back in a situation where it feels like there's a new energy, there's a youthful energy. There is a team that will probably look to him or should look to him to lead. And I want to see how it all turns out. I want to see if his knee's okay. I want to see if his mentality is the same as it was. I want to see if he can have the same sort of unmatchable heights that he had for a really consistent period of time for this Atlanta team. And I want to see what Gabriel Heinze is going to do. Now, it doesn't start easy in Costa Rica at Alajuelense on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. To me, this is maybe the most fascinating first game out there just because of Joseph's status. And just because of the quality of the opponent, which is extremely good. They've just been wiping everybody for what it's going on.
Months on end.
I mean, it's like been a year or more at this point that it's just been complete dominance. And then they come home the next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. What is this year for Atlanta for you guys? And we'll get to the CCL matchup and hit it hard at the very end. But what does this year represent for them?
Well, to return back to the haiku, the final line was, I believe it was like, is the soul back as well?
Is the soul back too? Yeah, you know, I would have liked it. I would like to think that I've been burned in your memory, but you know.
Right. Is the soul back too? That is what this year is. It doesn't necessarily need to be 2018 Atlanta United, which was, you know, they won MLS Cup and they were one of the great teams of all time in this league. But like, can we see the 2017 version? Can we see that one where it's like, oh, they might lose 4-3. But we're going to watch every week, you know, and Joseph is going to do something every week that makes you like want to turn on the TV. And it wasn't just the results, though. It was the on field, you know, esprit de corps and camaraderie. You could see it with that team, and that was destroyed in the Frank DeBoer era. So I think that is the number one thing that Gabriel Heinze has to fix. I like that we'll get a real, you know, fast look at it against a really, really good team. And we'll get an idea of how far along Joseph is on his comeback as well. Because, you know, Jordan Morris came back stronger from his torn ACL, but not right away.
Yeah.
It took him about 3-4 months before he was suddenly, oh, this is Jordan Morris again, except better. You know, like if Joseph hits that level right away, I'll be shocked, but it's also like, it's Joseph, so you don't bet against him.
Temper our hopes with Joseph, or help us understand where he's at, maybe, Kalen, in his recovery and sort of where his mentality might be.
Well, that's the thing, is I was like, how does one ease Joseph Martinez back into the field? Like, do you limit his minutes? Do you bring him off the bench? Like,
Kalen, can I ask you this? Because he seemed like he wanted to fight to get back last year, and they were able to hold him back from that. Mm-hmm. A year in, even though he hasn't played pro games, I assume physically he's 100% back now. Like, was that the easing him? Was saying, hey, man, not 2020, but 2021 is yours, and you just let him run.
That's what Jordan did as well. If you look back at Jordan Morris's injury, he was training at the end of the season. And so you're able to get some of that, at least training time and, like, comfort, because you have to – part of it is just trusting your – like relearning to trust your body again, and especially the way that Joseph plays, even more so than Jordan. Both physicality, you know, is a strength of both of theirs. But I feel like Joseph is just like his mentality and the commitment and the, you know, I just feel like he is not going to be able to go halfway. So you kind of, as a club, have to hold him back into the point where he can actually really just go. I do think playing CONCACAF Champions League may be difficult. You got to be a little bit careful, especially around, I don't know, you know, different pitches you're playing on or travel, how that might affect the knee, swelling issues like that. But I would imagine starting off the year, that's why I really looked at that Orlando game as sort of like the marker to when you could really see him. And I think it's a perfect sort of venue for him to be able to get mentally dialed in for that match and then use it as a springboard. So I actually think he'll probably hit the ground running early on in the year. And he's the type of player where I think once he gets that confidence, gets that first goal, we could just see him begin to steamroll things again.
What a gift that Saturday, the 18th, at Orlando. Unimas Tudien. Also, you can watch it for free on Twitter at 2 p.m. Eastern on that Saturday. It's a great three-game start for Gabriel Heinze. It's a lot, though. There's no doubt about that. They went out and did a lot of business. Can I just run through that and then you can jump in?
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to talk about. So go.
Yeah, yeah. Three homegrowns, Jackson Conway among them, Efren Morales. Jackson Conway sounds like a gunslinger, man. Like, it sounds like he should be straight out of like
Jackson Conway is like, there's a guarantee he's going to play for the Red Bulls at some point.
Yeah, probably.
It's like he should be on that should be the title of like a $4 novel at the supermarket.
Jackson Conway, by the way, would have done well playing with Kalen in Houston. Like, that's his vibes.
He was in my rookie symposium class, so.
He learned from the best. Kid.
He's got some Cam Weaver, Will Bruin vibes to him. So
the bigger acquisitions, if I make
it sure, I started
track, are Sosa and Ibarra in central midfield. Sosa in particular is $8 or $9 million rated young Argentinian defensive midfielder, can play some as a number eight as well. And I think the expectation is that he's just going to be able to walk in and lock down that spot. Ibarra is a little bit more of a project. And then, like, they brought in Lisandro Lopez. Eric Lopez is finally going to play as well. So they have depth all across the attack.
Marcelino Moreno was late last year, and we saw him a little bit.
So an interesting thing, though, so one more note before we probably get to the this is fine point is like a week ago or week and a half ago, Gabriel Heinze said, yeah, there's a new center back coming in. It's Alan Franco. He's a fringe Argentinian international. He plays for Independiente. That was a week ago. There's still nothing official yet. It hopefully is just on the same sort of timeline and trajectory that we saw with Cincinnati and Lucho Acosta, where it was basically announced a week before it happened, and then it was officially announced. But if they get Franco as well, like, he and Robinson together makes a lot of sense. They have questionable depth behind them, but, like, Anton Walks has played in MLS. George Campbell is a well-regarded homegrown player. If you're a great coach, you are able to get more out of those types of players than your predecessor did. So everyone from Sosa and Marcelino and Franco and Robinson, like, this is all a referendum on Gabriel Heinze. To see, like, if he is that Tata Martino level coach in this league, and they bet big that he is. And frankly, they need him to be.
Ronald Hernandez, and also just another last starter, piece, I believe, at right back, probably.
Yeah, but last piece on the Alan Franco one is their inability to lock in a center back earlier is one of the reasons that it seems hard to think they're going to go deep in CCL. Because it's not like a luxury position. It's an absolute need to have a starting center back for them to come in because they got rid of Meza already. And they don't have that going into this series.
We did the star spotlight. We gave the time to Joseph Martinez. You know him. You might love him or you might hate him, but that's what makes him a star all the same. 2222 player to watch has got to be George Bello at left back. Breakout season last year during the pandemic and everything that happened. 19 starts. Started to look like the George Bello that people had talked about as a prospect before he hit the first team. What did we see from George? Any sort of like scouting report from you guys or like, hey,
it just happened.
Yeah, is everything okay at the Doyle household?
Holy crap. I think there was a big accident across the street or something exploded.
I heard it.
Wow.
That was insane.
Yeah, George Bello. Hard to come back from an explosion, huh? Like, whoo, George, something explodes and we're just like, and come on, wow. Guys, George Bello. Who has a thought on George Bello? Stay safe, Doyle. If you got to mute and walk away, do it.
No, it seems fine now. So George Bello, like...
Nice, Doyle's just going to pick it up.
If he plays to his capabilities, he will be an $8 to $10 million transfer out. This, you know, next winter, he's on the radars of the same exact clubs that were scouting Brian Reynolds, the same exact clubs that were involved with Brian Reynolds. Though I think the bigger ask for 2222 is Barco, especially because it looks like Barco is going to be their number 10 and Emerson Heineman is going to be their number 8. That's a big question mark for this Atlanta side.
Can I just throw in, cause you know, I'm going to do it. Efrain Morales, I'm very excited about as a center back who can play with the ball for this group, and George Gamble as well. Hopefully he gets some minutes this year. But Morales for down the road, but U.S. national team guy.
Also, nobody loves Atlanta like Jürgen Damm loves Atlanta. It's pretty clear that Jürgen Damm was like, this is where I should have been the entire time. I'm out here like putting out Instagram stories, like driving to training with my kids. I'm loving the suburban life. Like Jürgen Damm, I'm excited to see what could come from Jürgen, and also Eric Lopez. You mentioned him, a guy that they stashed away and now bring back up, but he has a ton of pedigree as well. Young player, but we'll see. Marcelino Moreno, by the way, is suspended for that first leg of the CCL, which is tough. So that's going to be...
How? Oh, right, because they played CCL at the end of last year. Yeah. Whoa.
It's going to be tough for
totally
him.
Yeah,
I know. The life comes at you fast. Things start to pop up. Here's one for you, Kalen, on the mailbag side. What should Atlanta fans' expectations be for 2021? Is a trophy actually realistic? He says, this is Josh. Says Tata didn't win one his first season, of course. Only domestic coaches win MLS Cup, etc.
Yeah. Yes, trophies. Yeah, I think that's the expectation. Yeah, I think so. I think
they'd be disappointed if they didn't? Sorry, I just...
Can I answer the question?
Yeah, my bad.
I think if you have Joseph back, you should be fighting for trophies. And yes, a lot of things, I think he paves over a lot of cracks. And I think also with DeBoer gone, even when DeBoer was there, when things weren't going necessarily great within the locker room, there was discord and all around that's been reported in other places. I mean, they still got trophies, and that's a part of who Atlanta is. So I think Joseph comes back. I don't expect this team to be going for a trophy like the Supporters Shield, if that's the question. But and it doesn't sound like, you know, well, I don't know. I'm cautiously pessimistic about I think if Joseph gets healthy, I did pick them as a team that I think can make a little bit of
Atlanta's going to go up 1-0 in the first 10 minutes, and we're going to get the text from Caleb.
Let's go.
Just the eyes.
It's not going to work out. I know it's not going to work out. But anyways, I think that is the expectation there. That's partly why the club is so intensely followed and loved there. And that's the expectation of the fan base. So the way they came into the league was expecting to win trophies. They've done so. And I think last year was just sort of an awful freak year in a lot of ways, but they've reset quickly. I give them a lot of credit for how quickly they've reset and the way that they've been able to kind of build back. So yeah, I think we'll see a comeback year for them.
Ezequiel Barco, we didn't really mention. I was going to wait to see if anybody mentioned him. Doyle did. Like a tree falling. I know, but it was like a tree falling in the forest thing. Like he is one of the, he's one of the biggest throwers. I know Joseph is going to grab all the time from us, but Barco has, he's got the talent. He's had the pedigree. He's had the opportunities. He has not yet taken advantage of them. I truly am hopeful that this is Ezekiel Barco's year. I think that for what Atlanta's trying to do, for what this league is trying to do, having young players who had a big reputation come here and thrive and move on is really important. And I also just want to see as many people succeed as possible because it makes it so much more fun for all of us. Like, I don't want to see Ezekiel Barco scuffling to get traction or to have the final product or go through personal issues and not be in the team. I want to see Ezekiel Barco express himself and do really special things and have us all make him tune in potential and then move him on. So I hope that this year is that year for him. We shall see if it is. This is fine. Meme is that it isn't. It's also that Joseph isn't Joseph anymore. It's that everything that Gabriel Heinze does, as you said, Doyle, just doesn't quite come off. And
I think the bigger, I think the bigger one is that Sosa and Ibarra and Franco, if they get him, all struggle to adjust the way that Barco did, and that they actually don't have any difference makers in midfield.
Mm. That could be tough. All right, let's because we need time to have mailbag. What's our prediction? They getting through against Alajuelense? How are they doing in the league? You mentioned CC, or I mentioned Supporters Shield being a possibility. I don't think they'll be there, but I do think it's a clear playoff team.
I have them loss in CCL, 7th or 8th in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
I'm a lot higher on them than you are. I think they'll lose to Alajuelense, but I think they'll end up finding their mojo by about June, and they'll end up 2nd in the East, and like an absolutely fearsome team to face in the playoffs.
I think the schedule benefits them.
Okay. I worry that the Alajuelense game may come a little too early for them, but I think I'm going to be optimistic in this case, pick them to get through. And I think it's important for a new manager, a new sort of vibe within the team to get off to a good start. So I think they're going to be, I've still got them a touch below the very top of like Columbus. I feel better about New England. But I put them right around near the top 3, 4, 5, right around there for the Eastern Conference.
You know, our preview is out right now on the site, so I could check and see where you actually listed them. Well, give me a second, maybe. Let me scroll through.
I didn't. I forgot to fill that out, so you're hosed on
you
this
guys,
one.
You guys all...
Never put it in wax.
Oh my God, you cowards. None of you made previews for poor Jason. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this was such a big Anton Walk show, so a lot of confidence right now on his shoulders.
Yeah, look, a lot of it comes down to, is Franco real? Or is this just another one of the, hey, we got him, but we didn't get him. Oh, no, this one fell through. Oh, my God, sort of moments. I just think that this early schedule, they'll play once a week. They'll have time to ease Joseph in a little bit without dropping too many points. And then you have a pack schedule at the end. And if he's ready to go at that point, you have a lot of young legs around him. I think that they should be able to survive through it. We'll see, though. We'll see. Let's get to the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. As we go through the mailbag, remember that all these CCL games are on FS1. They start on Tuesday. It's Wednesday and Thursday. If you see us jump up on Spaces on Twitter, that means we're talking about it. Come hang out with us. Ask some questions. BS, hit the retweet button, whatever. What do we got?
Extra Time, driven by Continental Tires, presented by FS1 today. Lots of good drops for them. We've got Bill Wieners from Austin, Texas.
He's back.
I said his name right last time. I hope I did it again. He said, thanks for getting my name right. Question mark on this time. Lifelong soccer fan, was never really able to get an MLS, but with Austin FC entering the league, I'm dedicating myself to MLS football, otherwise known as soccer. What are some of the key all-time moments I should brush up on? Is there a Kirk Gibson, Christian Leitner, Flutie? I don't know who fell in his moment. A Cal Ripken-like streak, a Tom Brady-level dominance, John McEnroe-type meltdown, Iceland defeating England in Euro 2016. That's commonly referenced. Thanks for the season previews. Hoping Pochettino gets going this season.
So you start, in my opinion, with Pope.
What?
You start with Eddie Pope. You start with 96. You start with with the first
MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I was thinking of more, like, when we talk about MLS history, we tend to talk in terms of teams and dynasties and borderline dynasties.
DC and Pope. But I think that first moment...
Okay, that's fair.
Like, if you're talking about a you know, Christian Leitner moment or a Flutie to Phelan, must be the wide receiver, whoever the heck caught that pass. That to me, that's like the first stamp in the ground for MLS. Is that's Eddie fair. Pope okay. dunk heading DC into that MLS Cup victory and then them building on that.
Yeah, but okay. I mean, start at the beginning.
Any other?
Give me some other ones. All of our pandemic content for the last year.
We spent 3 months doing MLS history. We're not going to answer it in 45 seconds. Yeah, go back to last year.
There's all the Mount Rushmore episodes that we did. There's also, Bill, a ton of YouTube videos out there of legends of this league watching old games back, which are those moments a la Kirk Gibson, etc. So check those out. If you have any more specifics, hit us up. Or if you want to out there, tell us what your moment was. Always open to that.
Give us a list.
Extra time we'll put it together. Soccer.com.
Sam here from Montreal. Last one to close out on because, you know, we don't know what we're talking about. So we had to get someone from Quebecois. And he says, thanks for the great coverage on CF Montreal. You're 100% right. What is happening in Montreal? As a CF Montreal fan, I understand why the club is leaning toward young players with the potential of becoming an asset to sell them elsewhere in a near future. I do think the club will be exciting to follow this year, even if we absolutely are not a playoff team. Like you said, hopefully Mihailovic will take a step with us this year. I always loved him in Chicago. It's also true that Henri's departure will place the club in a totally different position about the pressure of the fans and them wanting results. I think 95% of the fan base in Quebec and Montreal was willing to allow Thierry time to get results because we had a young manager who's still learning, someone who wanted to play from the back, a new style of play, creating chances offensively. We understood that in the 2020 season wasn't going to be great with the context of playing in the U.S. It's really tough for the club, the fans, and the players, it goes without saying. We lost our coach. We have an extremely young team, and we're still playing outside the country. Do the fans tolerate a complete year of bad results or a second year of bad results? I like to think, like you said in the episode, that it could be a dangerous moment for our team moving forward in 2021. Just a quick reflection from a fan in Montreal.
Hey, thank you.
That's the DL.
Thank you,
from the
Sam,
real fans,
for giving us the lowdown here. It's good to know that we at least read the tea leaves pretty well. I'll give Kaylin a lot of credit for getting us on the right track with Montreal and expectations, and of course Dave for knowing his second city like no one else. All right, those are our season previews, guys.
He didn't even know it was an island. He did not even
know that Montreal's
an island.
Doyle, if you've got friends and family and love like you do in Montreal, no man is an island.
No, but the city is. City is literally an island.
We have 1 minute
That's
left.
A mental construct, Doyle. Keep it
No, it's a physical one. It's a physical one.
What do we think about our season previews? You feel good about the work that we've done here, guys?
No.
No.
It'll all be wrong. Yeah.
But that's, you know what? You accept that going in. Real soccer starts on Tuesday. CONCACAF Champions League get going at 5 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We, of course, will be here on Thursday to talk through the first 2 days of action. And then back next week. Monday is going to be our predictions episode, trying to get Charlie in so we can make it a five-person free-for-all. I don't know how that will work logistically, but I'm already reconsidering. And then on Thursday, we will bring in a ton of guests to get you hyped about MLS, to preview all the games. Go to MLSsoccer.com, check the coverage, check the schedule, start to map it out so you know what you're watching. It is almost here, everybody. Savor it and enjoy CONCACAF Champions League. We'll see you Thursday.